And died and went to the gates of heaven, and he met St. Peter. And Peter said to him, I have looked at your book of life, and you are welcome into heaven under one condition. The man replied, Yes, St. Peter. And what is that condition? Peter said to the man, You must spell the word love. So the man spelled the word, L-O-V-E. And then Peter admitted him into heaven. As the man walked in, Peter tells the man, Sorry, I've got to go. I'm busy. I've got to go talk to God. So I'm putting you in charge of the gate of heaven. But remember, in order for people to enter, they have to spell a word. The man said, Got it. So shortly after he was standing at the gate of heaven, the man's wife arrived unexpectedly. And the man said, What are you doing here? And she said, Well, I was just at your funeral, and when I was driving home from the funeral, I was in a car accident and I died. And the man said, Well, I got to warn you, in order to get in to heaven, you have to spell a word. She said, Okay, what's the word? And the man said, Czechoslovakia. There's always people who want to put conditions into getting in to heaven. While I was away in Osoyoos taking my course, I had a brief exchange in the doorway coming in and out of the hotel. I met a man named Stan, who was wondering who our group was and what kind of conference we were engaged in. So I told him we were a bunch of United Church ministers that were meeting together, and he told me that, he had a relative that was a United Church minister, and that he was a retired RCMP officer. And I'm not quite sure how it happened. I can't remember in that very brief exchange as we were passing in and out, but we started talking about the topic of life after death. I'm not quite sure how that came about, but we did. And then he made the comment that many people make, which was, well, I guess no one really knows because no one has ever died and come back to tell us about it. And I said, well, actually, that's no longer true. Scientific advancements in medicine and technology have brought a lot of people back from the dead, and thousands have shared their experience of consciousness beyond physical death. With that, he quickly ended the conversation and moved on. Don't invite me to a party. But Paul's letter to the church in Corinth. Outlines the point that science is just beginning to find evidence for, that we have two bodies, a physical body, an outer body that is finite and wasting away, and a spiritual body that is eternal, and that we are to nurture and grow and renew this spiritual body day by day. Julia Asante wrote a fascinating book called The Last Frontier, in which she outlines scientific, historical, and personal evidence for the existence of consciousness after death. As an archaeologist and a medium, she works in both the physical and spiritual worlds. In her book, she begins with new scientific discoveries about the workings of the brain, and how there is a growing body of evidence to demonstrate that there is a consciousness outside the workings of the physical brain. And she provides numerous examples. She cites the work of neurosurgeon Dr. William Penfield, who stimulated the cortex during brain surgery with electrodes. Do you remember when that was being done? I remember watching that on TV years ago. And despite years of experiments, flashes of memory could be recalled, but beliefs, decision-making, or any other aspect of a thinking person could not be stimulated by the electrodes. Penfield and others have since demonstrated that neuroscience's current models of the brain cannot account for the subjective inner experience of the self. All in all, she says, they conclude that the mind is not in the brain at all. Could this awareness of the self outside the physical biology of the brain be a recognition of the existence of what religions have termed the spirit or soul? She goes on to tell the story of numerous people who, while undergoing surgery, have experienced out-of-body experiences in which their awareness of self floated out of the operating room and about the hospital, even going outside. One woman, when she awoke and had a near-death experience, described to the attending nurse about a blue shoe she had seen on the outside ledge of a hospital window. She described the shoe with amazing detail, outlining the scuff marks on the side and where how the shoe was sitting on the shoelace and the placement of where exactly to find this shoe. So the nurse went and had to go through all these rooms, go look outside the window and peer around the corner and saw a blue shoe sitting outside the ledge. There is a consciousness outside the physical brain that is capable of seeing things. According to Asante, 13 million people in the U.S. alone have reported near-death experiences in which they share how they were greeted by deceased relatives, some of whom they didn't even know had died. Guides or angels appear to assist them. They are drawn through a tunnel of light, engulfed by an overwhelming sensation of love, have incredible spiritual comprehension and understand the choices they have made in their life. They encounter an indescribable love, rapturous descriptions of a warm being of light with a surprising sense of humor. Many seem to undergo a life review in which they experience panoramic flashbacks of their life as well as future scenes, all in an instantaneous sense of time. They become aware of how their words and their actions have impacted others, and they feel those deeply, empathically, both the positive and the negative. And while they may feel regret over harming another, there is no sense of judgment, only a desire to improve and do better. She said, studies indicate that this seems to play an important role in the decision whether or not to stay in this alternate reality or to return to continue their lives. Moreover, she says, in addition to all of these near-death reports, there is a growing body of documentation of people communicating with deceased loved ones. According to Asante's research, as of 2011, Bill and Judy Guggenheim, who have established the After Death Communication Project, there have been 10,000 verifiable reports from people who have experienced communication with deceased people. In fact, they estimate that 50% of North American population has had some communication with those who have died, after they have died. While some might dismiss these reports as hallucinations or wishful thinking brought on by grief or loss, several of the reports submitted to the Guggenheims were spontaneous appearance of loved ones who are not known to have died at the time of the appearance. One woman, a mother, reported that her teenage daughter, Heather, appeared to her, accompanied with the girl's grandfather, the woman's father, who had died 6 years earlier. The grandfather of the girl and spoke to the mother while they were both standing there. She said they were about a foot off the ground and very flesh and blood, very tangible. And the grandfather of the girl spoke to the mother saying, "Don't worry, baby, I have her." And then they both disappeared. The mother, Christine, reported that her father had always called her baby as a nickname since childhood. She said a few minutes later, after the appearance, policemen arrived at the woman's door to inform the mother that her teenage daughter, Heather, had just been killed in a car accident. How could this mother have imagined this encounter if at the time of the encounter she did not even know that her daughter had died? Asante points out that if these thousands of documentations were offered in a courtroom and submitted as evidence that our consciousness of self survives beyond our physical death, there is overwhelming evidence, data, to support the claim that we possess a consciousness that survives beyond the physical body. We have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. You and I don't have to just rely on hope or faith anymore. We have heart evidence to substantiate Paul's claim. Paul and Asante both invite us to let go of our fear of death and rest in the assurance that our souls are eternally made. And all we have to do to gain passage to this alternative reality is die, because it just is. As Paul says, we have the Spirit as our guarantee. This is one place where science and spirituality are finding common ground. Where else is science and spirituality finding common ground? We've explored the world of spirit briefly. That's the one body, the inner body. And Paul says we have a second body, the physical body. And science is providing enormous amount of data, not just on our physical bodies, but on the entire universe. And they're offering great insights. First of all, scientists are discovering what religions have said for centuries. Much of what exists, we cannot see. In fact, over 97% of the universe is invisible, unable to be seen by the naked eye. That's what the Hubble telescope is telling us. Satellites are also telling us that universe upon universe extends outside of our own galaxy, that are thousands of light years away. As Paul said, we look not at what can be seen, but what cannot be seen. For what can be seen is temporary, but what cannot be seen is eternal. So much of our universe is unseen, invisible space, mystery, seemingly eternal. It goes on and on infinitely. And then we come to the subject of time. Not only has our Earth been in process for 13.7 billion years, a number so large we have difficulty grasping it, but science is now not ruling out the hypothesis there are potentially multiple and parallel universes occurring at a level of time that is beyond the understanding of our limited three-dimensional mind to grasp. Time is eternal. The vastness of space is immeasurable and seems to extend into infinity. So is that the same thing as eternal? Moreover, in the smallest particles so far discovered, scientists have been able to discover that when observed, they can disappear in the blink of an eye and reappear somewhere else. That things visible blink in and out of observable vision. Is that what our spirit is? And so science is suggesting that our concept of time and space needs to be rethought. The other important thing that science is contributing to spirituality is a concept of evolution. Science is recognizing that the entire planet has been evolving for 13.7 billion years, and that you and I, humans, are relative newcomers to this process, arriving with the discovery of a hominid skeleton of a female scientists have named Lucy, who they think is around 3.2 million years ago, old, in Ethiopia. But science is also telling us something new about our planet, and that is this: it's in great peril. While our planet has undergone numerous climatic changes and endured intense heatings and coolings before, endured ice ages, right now, because of the way we humans exploit our planet and extract our resources, we are causing the extinction of species on a daily basis. We are thoughtlessly destroying the trees which are our lungs. That the rate of our carbon emissions is causing huge disruptions in our atmosphere, and the imbalancing of our ecosystems are resulting in severe climatic changes with disruptions in our weather patterns intensifying and causing environmental fluctuations that have the power to destroy us. In fact, many of the caravans of refugees coming up from the southern hemisphere are not just because of human conflict, but as a result of famine caused by drought and changing weather patterns. Scientists are telling us that we just might be the first species to determine whether or not we go extinct. And so far, it appears we're not choosing very well. So we need to become conscious of the seriousness of our plight faster. And that is what spirituality also has in common with science. The knowing that we humans need to be evolving into something wiser and more compassionate. If we humans are evolving, we need to be evolving in the direction away from self-centeredness and self-interest and moving in the direction of care and concern for the other. As one scientifically minded theologian put it in the series, the DVD series that we're watching called Painting the Stars every week. As Philip Clayton puts it, science is demonstrating that we live on a planet with complex and balanced ecosystems of interdependency and symbiotic relationship. The trees are dependent on us and we are dependent on the trees for the very oxygen we breathe. We are deeply connected with all life forms on this earth, and we need to learn how to live together peaceably and non-exploitively. We need to live in symbiosis, which means literally living together. Painting the Stars tells us the ecological agenda is the church's new moral agenda. Understood in this way, as Christians living in the 21st centuries, as followers of the way of Jesus, we are being asked to live in. Jesus was the new human. Jesus was the result of evolution, of thousands and thousands of years of the human evolving. Jesus represents the pinnacle for us, and we haven't caught up to him yet. If we are to be followers of the way, if we are to evolve into his level of consciousness, we need to care about the things that Jesus cared about: compassion for others, respect for diversity, care and concern for those who are most vulnerable and oppressed, love for enemies and peacemaking, justice and equality. Jesus was a highly evolved human, in touch with eternal things, aware that we are both physical beings and spiritual beings, that as Teilhard de Chardin, a contemporary theologian of the 20th century, reminds us, We are spiritual beings having a human experience. And we need to treat one another and this planet well. In 451, at the Council of Chalcedon, the council affirmed that Jesus was fully human, born of a man and a woman, fully human and fully divine, that the Spirit of God was fully present, alive in him. Jesus was a human being filled with the Spirit of God, a being with two natures. And isn't that what Paul tells us in our scripture today? While our physical body is wasting away, we have a spiritual nature that is growing and being renewed day by day. So Paul reminds us, so are we, fully human and fully divine. And that is the purpose of science and spirituality. To come together, to remind us who we are and whose we are and what we need to do to save our planet. But the fact that people of faith are aware that we are spiritual beings with an eternal home does not mean we relinquish responsibility for this beautiful home. It means that we do our very best to save it, to repair it, to care for this beautiful garden we have been given. It means we are being called to evolve into the kind of compassionate human, God's best and newest human, that we glimpse in the life and way of Jesus of Nazareth. On Tuesday at 4 p.m. at St. Edmund's Anglican Church, members of this city, members of Qualicum Beach, clergy from Qualicum and Parksville and Oceanside are being asked to gather at 4 p.m. on this Tuesday for a prayer vigil to pray for the end of hate and racism and to demonstrate our solidarity with our Jewish brothers and sisters who died in Pittsburgh. It's a small act of compassion. It's a small act of higher consciousness, but a small act done with great love can help us evolve. As Paul reminds us, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. But for now, we have this beautiful earth home, which we share with thousands of other species, including our own. And we are invited to do everything we can to be all about her salvation, her wholeness. May it be so. Amen.